Welcome back to another episode of the Girls Talk Money podcast. Today's episode is all about freelancing, everything from how to get started to what the day-to-day looks like and what the income potential truly is. But as always, before we dive in, let's do our weekly recap. So Erin, what's going on in your life?
Before we get into today's episode, we have a super exciting announcement for you all. We are planning a Girls Talk Money trip and we want you to join us. From the very beginning of Girls Talk Money, we've said that we want this to be so much more than just a podcast. We want this to be a community-focused space where women in their 20s can not only feel empowered to be better with their money, but also level up in all aspects of their lives. And we truly believe that the people that you surround yourselves with are what is going to help you do that. That's why we're hosting a group trip with Trova Trip to bring together 20 plus women in their 20s that are all here for the same goal. We're all trying to level up in our 20s and meet really amazing people in the process. If traveling with us sounds at all interesting to you, definitely fill out the survey in the show notes of this episode. We will be tailoring this trip from the destination to the length to the cost to what all of you want to see and what is feasible for the majority of you. We are so excited to start fostering an in-person community with Girls Talk Money. So if you want to join us, fill out the survey and let's get back to the show.
Hello. It is Wednesday today and Grace and I changed our podcast filming days from Friday to Wednesday because we realized that we cannot form a cohesive thought on a Friday to do a podcast episode. So now we're filming on Wednesdays and it is making the world of a difference. I feel like I have so much more energy today and I'm really excited about today's episode. But for my little weekly recap, I had such a fun weekend. My one really good friend came in from out of town to visit me this weekend for my event, and we can talk some like event recap as well. But she came in on Friday and stayed with me and we just had like a little Pittsburgh staycation. I don't know. I was saying the other day that I was really upset a couple of months ago that literally all of my friends were moving away from Pittsburgh and that was really bothering me. But I've actually found that we're kind of a lot closer now. It's like when you find friends that you're actually super close with and then they move away, the time that you do spend with them is a lot more intentional, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So when Mandy came this weekend, you know, she was staying with me all weekend. We went out Friday night. We went to the gym together on Friday. We spent all day together on Saturday. We spent all day together on Sunday for my event. And another friend came over and we had like a sleepover on Friday. She brought her dog. It was just so fun. And that time that we spent together was so much more intentional than when everyone lived in Pittsburgh and we would just go out together on the weekends or maybe we would grab dinner here and there. So I actually feel like a lot more close to my friends now than when we all lived in the same state, which is really interesting, but I'm really enjoying it. And I think that goes to show too, like, I mean, Grace and I, we don't live in the same state and we are super close. We talk literally every single day between like texting and we'll send audio messages back and forth, like literally all day, every day between work and then also just some life stuff as well. So friendships don't have to be in the same city. And I'm definitely learning that, which is really encouraging in your 20s. But in terms of my event, it went so well. So if you don't know what I'm talking about, I have been throwing in-person events. This is my second one now over the past couple of months. Just for girls in Pittsburgh, I just feel like I started to develop a really big Pittsburgh audience on my Instagram especially. And I was getting a lot of requests for like meetups and things like that. So I threw a really big holiday event. And then I had an idea for a Galentine's Day event that I wanted to be a little bit bigger. And I booked an event venue at a hotel in downtown Pittsburgh. And we had a big yoga class with 140 women, which literally the photos of the videos from that yoga class, I was like, there was a lot of people there.
It was insane. Like there's people everywhere.
Yeah. No, it was literally an 1100 or 11,000 square foot ballroom, or maybe 1100, I don't know, but it was a really big ballroom and we literally taped like X's on the floor for 140 girls and people came and just like brought their own yoga mats. We had an instructor that was so amazing. She did such a great job. And then afterwards from 12 to 2, we had a little like brunch kind of with some healthy brunch snacks, some mimosa bar, some vendors came and set up shops to sell clothing, jewelry, accessories, all of the things. And it was so fun. We had such a good time. Everyone said that they had a really good time and that they're excited for me to potentially do more, which is really encouraging because Grace and I have talked about doing a Girls Talk Money event sometime in 2024. So stay on the lookout for that. But yeah, I just felt really grateful leaving this weekend because I had such a good time with my friends and then with the event as well and really just building up this kind of Pittsburgh community, which I love.
Oh, I just like love this for you so much. I really do. Because I know you were so sad about your friends like moving away and being able to kind of like almost like create your own community and like give that community to other women in Pittsburgh. Like, I feel like being in a smaller city, sometimes it's hard to meet people and there's not as much going on that like actually fosters that, and stuff that doesn't all revolve around alcohol, which I know we talked about before, where it's like the people are like, oh, like you can totally meet people in the city, and I'm like, where? And then they're like, go to the club. I'm like, hold on, back it right the hell up. Like, they like go to this like bar crawl or this whatever. It's like, I just want to do yoga with the girls, you know? Or just even just go to like, even if there's like a, see, your first one, it was kind of just like a mixer. You can kind of just like talk to people, but like, it's providing the space to actually do that, you know? A lot of the other stuff I feel like that goes on in the city, it's just in, I mean, at least in Boston, like, it's not as conducive, I feel like, to actually making friends, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like so many people, though, in their 20s, they just want space to, like, make friends and meet people, you know?
Pittsburgh is definitely hard because it is a smaller city, and there's also not a lot of, I guess you could call them transplants. Like, a lot of people grew up here. So when you're in that situation, you're not necessarily looking for new friends. So if you are in a situation where you just moved here and you don't have any friends yet, it can be hard to, like, where do you seek that out? Because everyone's kind of just content with the friends that they've had for their entire life. So everyone said that they were really appreciative that they could come and like meet new friends. And I also loved seeing girls there that came alone. I'm like, all the power to you.
Yeah.
So proud of you for doing that. I am not confident enough to get into a room with 140 girls by myself, but I loved that people did. So hopefully they were able to make new friends. I remember after my holiday event, I got onto a coaching call with a girl that scheduled a like financial coaching call with me for like my budget template. You can set up a call with me and things like that. But we got onto the call and she was like, I was at your first event and I'm actually getting dinner tonight with a girl that I met there, which made my heart so happy. I know. I love that so much. So if you are listening to this and you're in Pittsburgh, come to hopefully an event in the near future. I also have a Discord server that I started for girls in Pittsburgh, like some of the girls that have been coming to the events or just girls that follow me on Instagram that want to connect with other girls. And there's almost 300 women in there at this point. So if you're listening to this in Pittsburgh, definitely join the Discord as well. So you could make new friends, because finding those intentional friendships in your 20s is so important. And if you haven't listened to our podcast episode about that yet, go back and do it, because I love that podcast episode as well. But anyway, Grace, what is going on in your week?
Honestly, I was just telling Erin this before we got on that, like, my life has been pretty quiet and calm the last week, which I feel like is such a change of pace from, like, the chaoticness that just the last, like, 4 weeks have been. I've, like, officially been in my apartment for a month, and I feel like things are finally calming down. Like, I'm still not fully settled, so working through that. But honestly, it's just been, like, pretty calm in terms of, like, my personal life, which is so nice. In the past week, I've been, like, at this point with my business, which, like, is interesting because we're kind of going to talk about this today. But I've just been at a point where I'm really having to make some tough business decisions about, like, where I see things going and what I want to spend my time doing and all that. And I was just telling my therapist the other day, it's almost like a breakup when, like, nothing bad is happening. Like, it's like a, it's not you, it's me. Like, but you just know that's not going to be your forever person type thing. Like, there's just some aspects of my business that I'm at a point where I enjoy what I'm doing, but I know that it's maybe not the thing that's, like, really pushing me forward in my business. And I'm still getting inbounds from clients that want to work with me, and I can't work with everybody under the sun. So, you know, and I also am just really trying to have, like, really good work-life balance so I could, like, prioritize bettering myself this year. And yeah, I mean, that's the only, like, real big thing I feel like that's been happening last week, is just really having to make those types of decisions. Yeah, honestly, like, it's been calm, and I'm like, thank the freaking Lord, because I feel like it has been amazing then, which has been, like, one thing after the next, and things are finally, like, settling down a little bit.
Yeah, I love that for you, and that is definitely tough. This segues really nicely into our conversation for today's episode, but those are tough things to consider. However, I think you are doing a good job of kind of taking a long-term approach to your career and saying, mm-hmm. okay, is what I'm currently doing sustainable? Like, really thinking about it in terms of, this is going to be my business for a really long time, and where do I see my 5-year business plan and things like that. Mm-hmm. So With that, let's get into today's episode. Like Grace said, we are talking all about freelance work in this episode, and we get so many questions about this topic. And Grace is actually a full-time freelancer and has been since graduating from college. So I think it'll be super insightful for you to all hear from her and really understand how she got started, what she actually does for work when she says that she's a full-time freelancer, and all of the ins and outs of being self-employed in your 20s. So Grace, let's kick it off with, what does it mean to be a freelancer?
I feel like this can be kind of confusing. I'll do my best to describe it. I feel like I should know how to describe it really well considering it's what I do. But basically, a freelancer is like an independent worker. So you are somebody who offers some sort of service to a client and you work entirely for yourself. So you're not an employee of that company. You are a contractor. So for example, if you are a freelance videographer, you do video work for clients. If you are a freelance blog writer, you write blogs for clients and they pay you to do that, but you are not an employee of that company. So basically, if you've ever known anyone who's like a full-time contractor, like has a contract position, it's basically like that, but it's just a lot more flexible because your clients are ideally not taking up, like, you don't have 40 hours a week with one client. So you kind of have a whole client base and you offer individual services to each of them.
Yeah, I feel like the biggest difference between, so being a freelancer is just essentially doing contract work for a client, like Grace said. And by contract work, that means that at the end of the year, when it comes to tax time, you're going to get a 1099 as opposed to getting a W-2. But the biggest difference between freelancer and contractor is typically with freelancers, you're paid by deliverable as opposed to getting paid by the hour. Some freelance gigs could potentially pay by the hour, but I think Grace, in your situation, you almost always lean for the pay by deliverable as opposed to pay by the hour, because it just makes so much more sense to get hired for one service or one deliverable and then get paid for that service or deliverable.
Yeah, that's what I do. There are definitely lots of roles, like lots of freelance roles that do pay by the hour. I think when it comes to like a contract position, so for example, like my mom had a contract role at a company at one point, and basically she's getting paid like 40 hours a week, like, you know what I mean? But all of her work is with that one company, which you can do, but it's not recommended. By me. But as a freelancer, you're usually kind of creating a whole full-time schedule out of several clients. So I don't even know how many I have at this point, maybe like 8 or 9, plus like my social media stuff is separate. So it's a lot of people that I'm managing and working with, but each of them pays me for a specific thing. So, but yeah, I tend to go more for packages that are based on the deliverable, which, I mean, we can talk about, it's so much better for income potential than hourly work.
Right. And you mentioned freelance videographer, but can you give us some more examples of types of freelance gigs? Because I think people get tripped up on the word freelancer, but like literally most skills, I don't want to say most, but a lot of skills can be freelance work. Like you can get hired on a contract basis for so many things at this point. So can you give some examples?
Yeah. I mean, kind of like you're saying, a lot of companies, they don't necessarily have the, so when a company hires someone full-time for like a salaried position, they're paying a salary. There's all these benefits they're paying for too. And a lot of companies are realizing that they don't necessarily need an entire department or a whole full-time person to get done what they want to get done. So they hire someone freelance. And that's why you're seeing like a lot more roles pop up in the freelance space doing different things. So you can do freelance, when you're like translation, so if you like speak two languages, you can do that on a freelance basis and work with clients here and there to literally translate documents or go in person and translate things. If you're a graphic designer, you can do freelance graphic design and create logos and things for clients. You can do freelance data entry, software development, project management, like literally anything. I do mostly marketing stuff, so content marketing, content writing, social media management, stuff like that.
Yeah, even everything down from customer service or administrative tasks and things like that. I've even have seen recently that project managers are starting to get hired on a freelance basis. You can find those positions on even like LinkedIn, and we'll talk later on in the episode about how to find freelance gigs, but let's take it back to when you got started with all of this. What was your first freelance gig and why did you kind of seek it out?
Oh God. So for context, for people who don't know, when I was in college, I wanted to own my own nonprofit. So I majored in urban studies. And then when I realized I didn't want to do that, I decided I wanted to be a human rights lawyer. So I declared a double major in human rights and a minor in social justice organizing. And that's what I graduated with. And my first semester senior year, I took the LSAT, just a law school admissions test, studied the heck. I was so bad. That exam, if you've ever taken the LSAT, you know, it was horrible. And then like pretty close before I graduated, I realized like I didn't want to be a lawyer. I wanted more like flexibility in my career. I wanted location freedom and time freedom. And when I thought about the life I actually wanted, I knew that like I thought about, okay, like what is the day-to-day of my life that I want look like? How much money do I need to sustain that? And am I going to be able to do that as a lawyer? And I realized no. Being a lawyer was going to require me to be in person, in a cubicle, and be really emotionally exhausted. And that didn't align with the life I wanted. So I want to give that context because I think a lot of people think that you need some formal degree or whatever to offer freelance services, and you don't. I've taught myself literally everything I know from just, I Google the hell out of everything and I ask a lot of questions. So when I graduated, I was like, all right, I'll take a gap year. And then I'll decide what I want to do. So that was kind of my intention when I started freelancing, was just to take a gap year. So I was kind of open to whatever freelance opportunity came my way. Because again, I had no experience. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And I felt like if anyone hired me, it was going to be a miracle. Because I mean, my degree was in human rights. I did have a lot of like skills though from roles that I had in college. So my very first freelance role, I believe it was a like video position. Basically, there was like a running app that was looking for some videos that they could use in ads, which is crazy because that's like part of what I do now as a content creator. It ended up being quite a disaster, if I'm being honest. They were like, just go do what you want to do. We trust you, whatever. And then when
you're like, don't trust me.
Yeah. Well, like there was a bunch of people working on this project, like a bunch of other freelancers, and we all were on the same platform. So we had all gotten onto like an onboarding call with this client, and like the client wasn't satisfied with like almost anything we did because they didn't give us any guidelines. And they were like, well, we don't want you to say this. We want you to say, oh God, it was just a mess. But that was like a one-off kind of thing. My first ongoing freelance client I had was actually a men's fragrance company. And I ran their social media. I had not a singular clue what I was doing. I would literally like work on their content during the day, and then I would spend so like several hours after work just Googling how to do what I need to do the next day because I just didn't know. And right around the same time, I'd say shortly after that too, I started managing a social media account for it's decently well known, I feel like, at this point, toothpaste company. I don't know if I can like share the name of the brand, but they're called Twice Toothpaste. I don't know. I still use their toothpaste. It's fire. It's co-owned by Lenny Kravitz. So it's kind of cool company. Really, really great product. And I was running their Instagram and part of their TikTok with not a singular clue of what I was doing.
So you were doing like mainly social media stuff way back when. How did you decide that those were the type of freelance gigs that you were going to seek out, or were you just applying for everything and that's what stuck?
I kind of was applying for everything at that point. I mean, I definitely, like, around the same time, I also had like a freelance sales role I was doing. I literally quit like 2 weeks into it because it was horrible. I hate sales, I learned. But I knew at the same time that like I was kind of starting from ground zero. Like, I had no idea what I was doing. So to me, any opportunity that came my way was like an opportunity to learn and also experiment and discover what I liked and didn't like. And so I knew that I wasn't going to know until I really got my hands on something. So I wasn't really being super picky about the opportunities that came my way. One thing that I've really focused on since the beginning of my freelance career is trying to get myself into spaces where there are people who are smarter than me or know more than me. So with this toothpaste company, like, the people who worked there, like, they're really talented entrepreneurs who like know what they're doing and have a lot of knowledge. The fragrance company it's a long-standing company, so I felt like there was a lot of opportunity to just learn from what those people knew just by being in meetings with them and talking to them and asking questions and things like that. So I was kind of focused on that too. I wasn't just accepting any opportunity that came my way, but I definitely was not being picky. And I had also had an interest in social media, so I felt like that was a good place to start because I felt like at least I had the interest, you know, something like sales. I was like, I'll give it a try. I'm not really interested, but I'll try it. Maybe I'll love it. And then I ended up hating it, you know, but
yeah,
no trial, but it was different media.
Right. And you mentioned that you would spend so many hours at night Googling everything that you needed to know. So your roles were taking you so much longer than they quote unquote should have or anything like that. But through that, now a couple years later, you do have all those skills, and the roles that you're picking up take you so much less time because you know what you're doing. So it all pays off. You're kind of like giving yourself the education, just really self-taught, which is so important.
Absolutely. And I want to say too that in the beginning, it wasn't like I was living at my parents' house. I wasn't paying rent. I had, you know, my student loan payments and, you know, some like medical expenses and things like that. But I was able to live a little bit cheaper. So, but I will say that didn't mean that I was just like sitting there kind of twiddling my thumbs and being picky about the roles that came my way. Like I would spend 40 hours a week on my like freelancing with my clients. Then after work, I was spending a lot of time, again, teaching myself things, Googling things, taking like courses or watching YouTube videos. And then pretty much Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So after work, Thursday, Friday, all day Saturday and Sunday, I was doing Instacart grocery delivery, quite literally all day. Like I'd be out there for like 10 hours a day on the weekends because I needed something that was going to get me money. And when I was starting some of these roles, I think the social media management role with the fragrance company, I believe it was $20 an hour. And I believe that it was very similar with the toothpaste company. It was like $20 an hour, which as a freelancer, I mean, that's pre-tax. And as a freelancer, you're getting more taken out on taxes. So like when all said and done, I was making like $14 an hour, which is not much, you know, especially living in Massachusetts. It's just not going to get you very far. So I was hustling. I was out there hustling and grinding and trying to learn as much as I could, as fast as I could, because I was sick of making $14 an hour.
Were there any, so Google and YouTube, obviously for learning new skills, but were there any courses or any platforms that you used to take courses that you thought were beneficial when you first got started?
So I took one course on HubSpot that was on digital marketing, and I will say it was lengthy and I feel like a lot of it was just not necessary. It was free and it had a certificate at the end, so I felt like that would give a little bit of legitimacy. But if I'm being honest, nobody gave a crap. Like nobody asked me about my HubSpot certification. No one really cares. I will say I learned way more from following people in social media. Like Maya Nicole is a social media expert. I followed her for years and I've learned so much about how to run client accounts. There's a guy named Brock. I think his last name's Johnson.
Brock Johnson.
Yep. Yeah. Like I followed him, learned stuff from his page. The majority of what I was learning was coming from social media, like from YouTube or following experts on social media. I think a lot of courses have a lot of fluff that you just really don't need at the end of the day. Like I can, at that point in time, like I don't need to know about like the psychology of a consumer and stuff. Like I need to know how to like get the TikTok audio to sync with my video or like, you know what I mean? Like it's
very niche things.
Yeah, for sure. Exactly. Yeah.
However, I think the certifications, and just to kind of set the scene here, what we're talking about doesn't only apply to social media freelance gigs. Like we said at the beginning, there are so many different types of freelance roles where essentially you are just paid for one specific deliverable, and this kind of applies across the board. But the certifications can also be really helpful if you're trying to leverage LinkedIn to get more freelance gigs, which we can definitely talk about. I want to know how you leverage LinkedIn and all of the things. But a lot of those certifications give you badges that you can put onto your LinkedIn. So if you are trying to leverage LinkedIn, sometimes that can help like recruiters find you, or like it can kind of like help you target the right audience for the gigs that you're trying to apply for. So that is still a good tip. Even if you feel like you didn't necessarily get what you needed out of it at the time, it still could potentially help you. I know there's a ton of courses out there for things like Google Ads, if you want to be like a digital ad specialist or different things like that. So I wanted to throw that out there. But I wanted to ask, so about your first couple of freelance gigs, how did you find them? I know you talk sometimes about different like platforms that you use and things like that.
Yeah. So I will say in the beginning, almost every single one of my clients came from a platform called Pangea. I started working as kind of like an intern of sorts at Pangea when I was in college. And I was helping like recruit people to the platform is basically what I was doing. And so when I graduated, I was like, well, it's a no-brainer. I'll use Pangea. And I don't use it anymore. I'm actually their social media manager now, but I don't use it necessarily to get gigs. I would. I just have been fully booked for so long, but I still think it's a good platform to this day. I think a lot of people, when they answer that question, like, oh, where did you get started? Their answer is like no longer relevant. So I want to make it very clear that, you know, they're like, oh, I went on Fiverr. And it's like, okay, well, like, yeah, Fiverr like 10 years ago is very different than Fiverr now. Which by the way, I would just skip Fiverr and don't mess around with Fiverr. That's so oversaturated. And no, you're competing against people who can charge $4 an hour because that's a sustainable rate for them, but that is not a sustainable rate for you if you're in the US. But yeah, Pangea was where I got 99% of my first clients. Yeah, it's a freelance platform basically where you can apply to gigs that are posted.
Not that really. And I feel like I know the answer to this, but you did not build up a portfolio before you started applying to gigs. Did you wait until after you started? And then like at what point did you put together a portfolio if you did that?
I absolutely Hail Mary'd it in the beginning. I was like, I'm just going to be DeLulu and submit this and like whatever. I will say one thing that I think was helpful for me is that when I get on a call with clients, I can talk. Like I know how to convey my value. And I feel like I'm very personable, especially with clients. And I will say that if you have that, you're so much further ahead than so many of the other freelancers are gonna apply to these gigs. And I can say that too as someone who like I've hired freelancers, both like for myself and on behalf of clients. So like communication part is what a lot of freelancers are lacking, and I knew I had that. But I didn't have a portfolio on Pangea. I had like my profile. So I was able to add in stats about like, you know, a couple projects I did in college or things like that. I will say because I had worked for the founder at Pangea, I also had him to vouch for me. So when clients would come onto the platform and they would get a bunch of applicants for something, you know, he'd reach out and say, here are a few freelancers that I think would be a good fit for you to help you kind of like, you know, sift through the list of 50 people that you just had apply. And I think that was definitely helpful, but it by no means meant that I got every gig I applied for, that's for sure. But no, and I think as a social media manager, I never really had like a portfolio per se. I would highlight certain stats for people when I submitted proposals, but I never really had to get like a really killer portfolio together. I just made sure I conveyed my value in the proposals and on my profiles on things. When I pivoted over to writing, I had a portfolio, but it was, I probably didn't develop it until I didn't have any sort of portfolio probably until I was at least 6 months in. I was just Hail Mary in it.
So I feel like knowing a little bit of a background of your freelance business, I think there's two big shifts here. And the first is going from like really hustling at the beginning where you were submitting like proposal after proposal and really just getting these kind of random like little bit of one-off clients or doing gigs that you like, you're not being super picky. You're getting one-off clients here and there, and then making that transition from that to really building up a book of long-term clients. So I think that's like the first big shift. When did that sort of happen to you, where you started maybe getting hired on for a monthly retainer for some of your clients, or finding clients that you really liked working with and those became long-term clients for more than like a couple of months here and there?
So I will say my first few clients, like pretty much all of them I worked with on an ongoing basis for several months. Like that fragrance company client I probably worked with for a year. The toothpaste company, I think I worked for like 6 to 8 months. So they were all, like all ended up being like longer term clients. I would say the first like 2 months was when I was kind of not being as picky. So like I said, I took on that sales role. I wanted to see if I liked sales. And 2 weeks in, I realized I hate it. So then I like let it go. But I will say I did hit the jackpot for sure. I also had a client from the beginning that I ended up working with for might have been almost 2 years or like maybe like a year and a half. They were a dream client. They were a student loan search and comparison tool. which is kind of what sparked my interest in personal finance, like in incorporating personal finance into my career. And I landed them a couple months into my freelance career. However, and again, I worked with them for a long time. So they were all on monthly retainers. However, I wasn't used to that like potential to just be dropped as a freelancer at any point. So I was working 70 hours a week between freelancing and Instacart for the first 6 months. And then at that 6 month mark was when I pulled back on Instacart because I felt like I was stable enough with my clients. I was like, okay, I know the fragrance company's not going to let me go. Student loan company's not going to let me go. You know, like I felt solid. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I also had taken on another client that was a deodorant startup. And I was with them for a while until I fired them like 6 or 8 months later.
Okay. That's so interesting. How do you balance? I know this is something that we talk about all the time, like even to this day. So you're still trying to find that balance, but how do you balance wanting each client's retainer to be big enough to be kind of worth your time and energy, but then wanting to diversify your clients enough so that if one client does drop you, or if you need to kind of like take a step back from a client, you still want the diversity of your income streams. So how do you balance that?
Yeah, I learned this the hard way, I will say, because I had a client that unfortunately they were having like a month where they were a startup, and then fortunately they had a month where their accountant came to them and was like, hey, look, you do not have as much runway, which is in a startup, runway is the amount you want to have enough money in the bank to keep your company functioning at the same level of expenses for a certain amount of time. And their runway, they spent so much in 1 month that their runway decreased from like 24 months to like 18 months. And that was a huge drop. So they were like, their account was like, hey, we got to make sure that you're spending less in the next couple months to get you back on track, because you don't want to run out of money to run your startup. You want to make sure you have, you know, that runway. So they had reached out and they were like, hey, unfortunately, like we have to basically slash your contract, like in like more than in half. And that was the bulk of my income at that point. And I was like, oh shoot, like that is so bad. And I was a little panicked because they were my favorite client. They still, the people I worked with are absolute angels. I love them and their company still, but it was so jarring to have over half my income taken away. So now my kind of like, I don't know, the way I approach it now is I don't let any one client make up more than a third of my income, because I feel like if that contract were to end, that is a lot of my income to go away. I also think there's a component of it where you need to make sure that you are not draining every dollar out of your bank account, so that if you do have a month where, say, client can no longer work with you, whatever, a third of your income goes out the window, you have like an emergency fund as a buffer. You have money in your business bank account as a buffer. So you have time, basically, because then in that case, it doesn't, you know, make it as tricky. But I think also something to keep in mind is, say a client wants you to come on for 40 hours a week as a freelancer, they're having you basically do full-time work, but you aren't getting benefits. So like that's something to think about too. Like, don't take on so much work that it would basically be the equivalent of a full-time job with one client. But yeah, no more than a third of my income per client.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think we should do an entire episode all about managing kind of like side hustle, freelance, inconsistent income. I know we get a couple of questions about that in Spotify, but if you are comfortable sharing, about how many clients do you currently have and about how much money do you make on a monthly basis from that?
So I would say maybe like 7 or 8 off the top of my head. I'm really trying to think because I just am onboarding a new one, but I would say, yeah, like maybe like 7-ish. I would say I should do the math, but I haven't. Let me think. Dang, I'm trying to do the math in my head. I have one. Let's talk it out loud, okay?
Yeah.
One has 2,500. One is right around 30, probably like 3,400. What is that? 5-something. Then I have another one at 3. That's 8. I would say, if I had to guess, I'd say anywhere from like 12 to 15K a month from freelance clients. It does fluctuate a little bit. Like, I have a client that I charge for blogs, I charge per word. So on months where we have like longer blogs, it's more money versus like months worth of blogs just happen to be shorter. It's less. I would guess like somewhere around there.
Okay.
Revenue. I want to say that revenue. But I don't have a ton of expenses. So
yeah. Top line revenue. I love that so much. And kind of go back to what we were talking about in our weekly recap segment with finding that balance between wanting to still be able to onboard new clients or answer inbounds, but maybe not spreading yourself too thin, or taking a look at those clients and being like, who fills my cup and who is draining me, or what work is under my current rate, or things like that. Have you had to have any hard conversations with any of your clients or let any go?
Oh God. Yeah. Over like the last 2.5 years, for sure. I've had to let clients go for several reasons. In the worst case scenario, it was a client who, unfortunately, I would say was pretty verbally abusive and disrespectful to me and other women on the team in specific. He would talk about women that worked with him, like, you know, on other aspects of the company, and say that they were idiots and they were stupid. And he would call us in for a 30-minute meeting and then talk to me and another individual on the team for 3 hours, and we'd be like, oh, we have to go. And he'd be like, yeah, you have. What do you have to do? Go to. He would call me. I gave him my personal phone number at the time, which don't ever do that. I learned that the hard way in the beginning. He would text me and call me at like 6 p.m. and my dumbass would answer the phone when I was at the gym and I was working out, because I was so afraid of losing the client because he paid me so much money. But yeah, I was like, you gotta go. Like, you, no. Let him go. I've had other clients that it just was no longer in alignment, like that company that unfortunately had to like kind of slash my work in half. It got to a point where, same thing, they were just kind of focused on extending the runway and had to like kind of pull back on the marketing front because they had some demands on the partnership side and product side that really needed to be taken care of. And it got to a point where the money just like wasn't worth it. It was such a small contract, it didn't make sense. So we just kind of like, this very like amicable kind of split, like we were both like, he's like, yeah, I get it, whatever. But yeah, I've absolutely had to let clients go. That's part of it, is you have to like, I've let wonderful clients go, right? Like letting that client go who sucked was obviously, you know, a little bit, it was hard because they paid me a lot of money, but it was also easy in a sense because they were so disrespectful. But I have had to let clients go that I love, just because it doesn't make business sense for me and where my business is going, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And all of your current clients are all around still the social media sphere, right? You're doing video creation, you're doing blogs, you're doing newsletter writing. Is there anything else that I'm missing?
So I would say more of what my work falls into now is more considered in the category of content marketing. So I have a couple clients that I write blogs for and I manage like SEO. So I'm kind of looking at, you know, what their competitors are ranking for in the blog space, how we can kind of attack those same keywords, focusing on building out what's called topical authority, which basically just makes sure that Google is like, oh, hey, this blog is an expert on this topic. And then I have a couple clients that I do ghostwriting for, which is basically where you write something for them and they get to claim it as their own. So with a blog, they're crediting, like it says, it'll say like the author, it'll say my name. Ghostwriting, you don't get no credit for it. So I help ghostwrite someone's newsletter, and then I do a little bit of ghostwriting for people on LinkedIn, mostly startup founders. And then I do have like one freelance client that I do social media management for, and then one new client that I will be doing influencer marketing for. So I'll be managing their influencer campaigns and managing the budget and stuff there. But yeah, it falls more under like the content marketing umbrella. But yeah. I do a lot of different content marketing things.
Definitely. And then how do you leverage your own LinkedIn to help kind of propel your freelance business?
LinkedIn is such an underutilized goldmine for freelancers. Like, insane. In the beginning, what I started doing was when I first got on LinkedIn and wanted to leverage it, I connected with like everyone that I knew, right? That was like in my network. My clients, you know, anything like that. And then I started reaching out to people that I thought were cool, right? Like, there was a startup founder, I worked with them for about a year. I had just come across their product online randomly. It's like a fintech startup. thought their product was so cool. So I went to the founder's LinkedIn and I sent him a message and I said, hey, I think like just came across your product online. I think what you're doing is really cool. Let me know how I can support. And I left it at that. He was like, oh, cool. Like, would love to get on a call and get your feedback. Hopped on a call with him, 15-minute call, gave him some feedback. He was like, oh, I also saw that you're a marketer. Like, are you currently taking new clients? We're actually looking for help there. So that's what I started doing. I would just connect with anybody I thought was cool and just tell them like, hey, what you're doing is cool. And like, or I would just engage with their posts or things like that. And that allowed my face and my image and my profile to kind of get on the feeds of people that matter, that, and by people that matter, I mean people that are going to make hiring decisions. And I also started posting on my LinkedIn. I would list out any of my freelance clients I worked with and what I was doing there. And then I started posting. I would post about results that I got for clients, post just my thoughts on marketing, like whatever I felt like, just for the sake of getting on people's feeds. Because again, now that I'm connected with these people who are really important, when they engage with my posts then show up on the feeds of their connections. So now I'm getting in front of more and more people. And I always try to establish myself as authentic, but also as somewhat of an expert. So I'm sharing my thoughts on something and that makes people think, oh, well, she knows a lot of stuff. And I do, right? But now it's gotten to a point where like LinkedIn is, I don't really apply for gigs on any platforms. All of my clients that I currently have now were brought to me through a referral or through LinkedIn. I think it's so underutilized for freelancers.
Yeah. No, 100%. That's the second shift that I've seen in your business over the past couple of years, is going from having some long-term clients, but still doing a lot of that outreach, to now being solely kind of inbound based, because you've established yourself in the space mainly through leveraging your own LinkedIn. I love that so much. So a couple of last minute questions here. Where do you see your career going from here? Kind of what is your, let's say, 5-year plan if you have one?
God, I don't even know what I'm doing tomorrow. I think right now for me, I'm at a point where I'm really focused on growth and freedom. So I want to make more money and I want to work less. And for me, I really want to think about time in versus money out. So, you know, contracts that maybe don't generate as much money and I'm investing more time into, I'm trying to either kind of phase those out or increase my rate and kind of think of it that way. I also want to focus on potentially building other businesses. Like I would love to, I want to focus more time on Girls Talk Money. I want to focus more on my content, but I also have ideas for totally separate businesses that I would love to start and run. And that takes time. So I think right now I'm also focused on like joy. That's something I've always prioritized in my business as well. Once I kind of got my feet wet and was like, you know, like actually standing up, but not during the first 6 months, but once I, you know, things were a bit more consistent, I focused on joy. So like what genuinely makes me excited and brings me joy. So phasing out contracts that don't bring me joy and focusing on landing ones that do. And honestly, I feel like that will kind of take me to where I need to be. I don't necessarily, I'm a big spiritual, really big manifester, as y'all know. And part of manifestation is not being in control of like the how. So like I see myself as someone who will fully be like making like $1 million cashiers in 3 to 5 years, right? But I don't necessarily know like the how part. So I'm kind of just following what feels exciting to me and letting things fall into place. So I don't really know where I'll be in 5 years, but hopefully making a lot of money and helping a lot of people and helping a lot of businesses.
I love that so much. It makes me so happy to hear you say that, because I totally see that for you in 3 to 5 years. You're like so smart, and everything you've built over the past couple of years since graduating from college is so impressive. Do you have any last minute piece of feedback or I guess advice for anyone that maybe wants to get started freelancing? They either are graduating from college or they have a full-time job and they want to leverage some of their skills to do some contract work on the side. Do you have any piece of advice for someone like that?
I would say if you are interested in freelancing and you are not taking action to try, you are making an active decision to keep yourself exactly where you are. I spent months convincing myself to go after freelancing when I graduated. And now at 25, I have a six-figure business. that would not have, like, my reality right now would not be possible. And I'll say I work like 30 hours a week, and that includes what I do with content creation. So I'm not even working full time, and I'm making over six figures at 25. You know what I mean? Like, had I gone into a career in, like, with my degree, I'd probably be making like 45 or 50. So it took me a while to convince myself to make that jump. But had I not taken that leap and just trusted that it would work out, I would be like, I would be so unhappy. And I think there's this like balance of like, you want to be prepared financially for unstable income, but also a lot of people fear making the wrong decision, and then they decide, so they just kind of don't make any decision. And I feel like when it comes to freelancing, at some point you just have to pull the trigger and make the decision. Because if you're sitting there thinking, I want to freelance, but you're not actually taking action, you are making a decision to stay exactly where you are. So I would say if you have a full-time job, don't necessarily go balls to the walls and like quit your full-time job and like go to freelance full-time. If I had not been living at my parents' house rent-free at the time, I would not have been able to do that, and I would not have done that. But see if you can land one freelance client that you spend a few hours a week after work with. And then maybe once that's good, maybe you ask your full-time job to kind of scale back a little bit and be a little less than full-time. Or, you know what I mean? Like, make it a gradual kind of situation if you can. And be persistent and communicate well. Like I said earlier, I think the biggest thing that is causing a lot of freelancers to not get roles is how they are talking about themselves and how they're communicating with clients. And one thing I'll add on that is that you also don't need to know everything off the bat. So if that is causing you to feel like you can't make the decision, no. I can't even tell you the number of times clients would ask me something and my response to them will be, even to this day, I'll say, you know what? I don't actually know the answer to that question, but I'll find it and I'll get back to you. And they love that because they don't necessarily need me to know everything under the sun. They don't need you to know everything under the sun. They just want someone who's going to actually put in the effort to try to find the answers. So don't let that stop you either. And honestly, just freaking go for it. Like, try to find a gig or whatever. Like, we'll link in the show notes some of my favorite places to find gigs and some of my favorite like tactics for finding gigs on Pangea, Contra, LinkedIn, like platforms that I've used. But at some point you like just have to kind of send it, you know, you do. You just have to send it and be to Lulu and pray. And I feel like that's kind of how it is with a lot of things.
I was just about to say that is not just applicable to freelancing. That is applicable to everything. Grace and I had no idea how to start a podcast when we released the first episode of Girls Talk Money. We still really don't. We're still going to have a meeting right after this and talk about like how to set up our mics properly and like figuring out our cameras and everything like that. You just literally have to send it and then figure it out later. This episode was so amazing. I feel like everyone listening is going to take away so many actionable tips, and hopefully this is just encouraging anyone who wants to kind of change their financial situation or change their career situation to just literally take the first step to do it. And in a year, your life could look totally different. So thank you so much for sharing everything. This was really fun to kind of be able to like interview Grace almost instead of us just sort of talking back and forth. So we want to try to do a little bit more of this style for the podcast. Let us know if you like the style or if there's anything else that you want us to kind of interview each other for. We also wanted to mention that if you have any questions for us related to freelancing, not related to freelancing, any questions at all, definitely leave them in Spotify. We used to do like kind of a listener question segment at the end of every episode, but now we've decided to switch that up a bit, and we are going to be releasing a bonus episode at the end of every single month that's strictly a Q&A episode. So we're going to read through some of the questions that are listed in Spotify. So if you have any questions for us, leave them in Spotify. We would so appreciate it. Or you can DM us on Instagram if you listen on Apple Podcasts as well. But thank you for tuning in to the Girls Talk Money podcast. Be sure to come back next week and have an amazing week.